Guerrero reaches for it and sends it to deep left. And he's so strong, he hit it out. Number 29 for Vladdy, and it is 3-1.
Hey, what's going on? It's At The Letters, brought to you by Miller Lite, the original light beer. Today is Wednesday, September 21st. Our producers are Nick Andrade and Christian Ryan. I am Arden Swelling in Toronto. He is Ben Nicholson-Smith in Philadelphia, city of brotherly love, and dealing with some Philadelphia hotel acoustics. So that's why Ben sounds the way that he does. Ben, you just watched like maybe one of the wackier Blue Jays games of the year on Tuesday night, just like an absolutely ridiculous affair that the Blue Jays ended up like winning by, you know, was 18-10, was it 18-11, something crazy?
18-11. Yeah.
I can't even remember. But anyway, all that matters is it was a W.
It may be a moot point. It is popped up. It'll be Biggio, and he will make the catch, and that will end this ball game. As the Blue Jays take the game by a score of 18-11.
29 runs, 36 hits. Blue Jays will go in with the W.
That's what matters, which really solidifies the fact that the Blue Jays are in the first wild card spot now. Two games clear of Tampa Bay in second, 2.5 clear of Seattle, who are in third. The Blue Jays 5.5 back of the Yankees for the division lead. That's looking somewhat unrealistic at this point. Also, like 7 games up on the Orioles, who are the fourth team in the wild card race on the outside looking in. So the Blue Jays falling out of postseason contention also looking pretty unrealistic at this point. I mean, is there any conceivable way, Ben, that you see the Blue Jays either moving up into like contending for the division or moving down out of the postseason, or are we looking at very, very, very strong likelihood that the Blue Jays are playing in the wild card series?
I do think they're playing in the wild card series in all likelihood. I mean, they're making it. They are making the playoffs, which is exciting for Blue Jays fans without a doubt after a near miss last year. And man, I mean, the last couple of Yankees games have been so interesting, I guess, to follow. There was the Sunday game where the Yankees trailed against the Brewers and then and ended up coming back. And then on Tuesday, of course, the game in which Aaron Judge hit home run number 60, they end up walking off on a Giancarlo Stanton grand slam against the Pirates. So, you know, in each of those cases, you're kind of sitting there thinking, all right, like this is a chance for the Jays to gain, or at least on Sunday, once the Jays fall behind, to at least hold their ground with the Yankees. And the Yankees, to their credit, keep winning. It really does seem unlikely that the Yankees are going to play poorly enough in the course of the next 2 weeks to give up a 5.5 game lead. Like, that's a lot of ground to make up. Technically, it's possible, but things would have to happen quick. Like, the Jays essentially would need a sweep when the Yankees visit Toronto next week. And in the meantime, the Blue Jays would have to gain a couple games. So I see it as unlikely. I think we're bracing for a wild card series. And the real hard part to predict here right now is what seed do they have? Because that part is pretty up in the air.
So, yeah, put it this way. Any combination of 10 Yankees wins and Blue Jays losses from here on out would clinch the Yankees the AL East. So that could be 5 Yankees wins, 5 Blue Jays losses. The Blue Jays might only lose 2 games the rest of the way, but if the Yankees just win 8, it'll clinch the AL East, like any combination there. So it just really seems super unrealistic to me that the Blue Jays take the division. So I don't think they're moving up, and I agree with you. I don't think they're moving down. I think the Orioles, Dunzo, great story, but the magic ran out, baby. And the Minnesota Twins, who like won the trade deadline, if you remember, are now under 500. So forget them. And neither of the other two teams in the AL Central are likely to even win like 90 games. So I just don't think that you're worried about, you know, if it's Cleveland or Chicago who finished second in that division, you're not worried about them in the wild card race. Blue Jays are going to play in a wild card series. They're going to have a 3-game series on the first weekend of October. So understanding that, what are the priorities now for the Blue Jays? Like, what do you focus on when you can't really move up or move down, when you know you're facing a 3-game series no matter what? What do you prioritize over the final 2 weeks? How do you approach these games? What's the sense of urgency?
It's such an interesting question. It's kind of a new one too, right? With this format, at least it feels different to me, certainly, than any other year. So I think for now, you just try to win. You just try to win and keep winning, because ideally you are in a position where you secure that top wild card. I think you really want to have home field. I think that definitely helps you. And you don't want to ever try to finesse it too much by saying, oh, we'd actually rather be the 3 seed and let's just try to lose X number of games and then we're going to start winning. I don't think that plays. I don't think that makes sense based on what John Schneider's saying. Clearly not the approach the Jays are going to take either. So I think you just, for now, you push. Now, maybe there's a point at the very final series of the season in Baltimore against the Orioles where the Blue Jays could say, okay, we're in a pretty good spot right now. Maybe we don't have home field secured, but we at least are going to be in. So at that point, you could decide to push, say, Gausman and Manoa to games 1 and 2 of the wildcard series. And you could say, all right, we're going to try our best with Trevor Richards' bullpen game, with Mitch White, whatever the case, and see what happens. Hope for the best, but not necessarily push everything in. But at this point, I don't think we're quite there. That's now still 2 weeks away. For now, you just try to win the games in front of you and hope that it leads to home field.
Ben, I think we're there. I disagree. Yeah. I think we're there right now because you know you're going to play in a 3-game wildcard series regardless. And I don't really care where that series is going to be. I don't care who it's going to be against. It's 3 games of which you have to win 2. Those are the most important things for the rest of the Blue Jays season. So that's why I think you're there right now, where I'm like figuring out the way that I am lining up Kevin Gausman and Alek Manoa to be available for the first 2 games of that series. And then whoever my preferred third starter is or third pitching configuration is for the 3rd game. That's my most important thing right now. Like, I understand there is some juice in this Rays series this weekend when it comes to seeding in the wild card race. I understand there could be some juice in the Yankees series next week. I just think if I'm the Blue Jays, like, my priorities right now, number one, health. If anybody is carrying something, pick something up, something's nagging, I am giving that individual all the time that they need to get over it. I am not putting them in a compromising situation where they can possibly make it worse. And number two, availability. I want my starters lined up for that wild card series. I want the important pieces of my bullpen, the relievers who are going to meaningfully contribute to a playoff series, rested and available for those 3 games. That's like, those are my priorities over all else right now. I'm not really pushing as hard as I can right now. I'm in a place where if I need to back off a starter, or I need to give a reliever extra rest, or if Alejandro Kirk needs more time, like just DHing to let that hip thing subside, I'm doing those things, and I am like laser focused on those 3 wild card games. That's to me what's most important.
I do think that certainly from a rest standpoint, if guys need extra time, this probably isn't the moment to push them over the edge, because you know that more important games are coming. They are going to play more than 162 this year. So clearly game 148 or game 154, it just doesn't have the same importance as the games that will come later. So I do think from a position player standpoint, you don't want to push these guys too hard. So where do you land with the rotation then? So, and of course, you know, we are still 2 weeks away, so there's still time for them to make these decisions. But, you know, at this point, are you inclined to say, map things out to line Gausman and Manoa up for wild card games 1 and 2 and just totally ignore them for that Orioles series at the end?
100%. I'm throwing Thomas Hatch in that series. I'm throwing Trent Thornton and Casey Lawrence in that series. I'm throwing Mitch White. I'm throwing Yusei Kikuchi. Like, that's who's pitching for me in that series. Anybody of importance is not pitching for me in that series. With Manoa and Gausman specifically for these next 2 weeks ahead of that 3-game wild card series, I want them pitching often enough to stay in rhythm and to stay, you know, just on track and in a good place with their mechanics, with their arm health and their care and everything. But I also don't want them pitching so much that they are compromised for that series. I want them as rested, as healthy, as available as possible going into those first 2 games. And I am rejigging everything else with my roster around that.
When you look at the numbers for Manoa in particular, and as recently, again, like 2-3 days ago, this all changes pretty quick. 2-3 days ago, the Jays were 4.5 back of the Yankees, right? And then if you're in a position to really push, of course, you're going to make sure that Manoa is available, for example, for that series against the Yankees in the finale, because that could be a chance to gain a game and avoid the first round altogether. Now, as we record this on Wednesday, that seems less likely as an option for the Blue Jays. So Manoah, when you look at the numbers, he's someone who has been very good on 4 days rest. Very good. 2.54 ERA, 22% strikeout rate, 7% walk rate. When he is on 5+ days rest, he pitches closer to 7 innings per start. The ERA is lower. The strikeout rate is slightly higher. The walk rate is lower. So the peripherals are better for Alek Manoah when he has a bit more rest, as they are for a lot of pitchers. Stands to reason that that would make sense. So at this point, probably makes sense if you can to give Manoah a bit of extra rest. I guess the downside to the approach that you're describing here, just to play devil's advocate, because I'm open to what you're saying here, but you know, the downside is if you fall into that number two spot in the wild card, then all of a sudden you still have to play, let's say it's the Rays. You go to the Trop on the road, you have to play the Rays. Then even if you win, you have to play the Astros. That's a really tough path to the ALCS. And again, you can't try to finesse these things and you can't try to finish third, but I think there's a case to be made for trying to finish first to avoid that situation. You play the third wildcard team, and then if you make it through, you actually get to play the Yankees, which arguably is a better second round matchup than the Astros.
And but Alek Manoah and Kevin Gausman are going to pitch like regularly enough over the next 2 weeks to give you your best possible chance of finishing first in the wildcard race. And if you enter that final series of the season and those guys could pitch in that Orioles series and maybe you're a game back of the Rays for first in the wildcard race, yeah, and you're like, you could pitch them and possibly move past the Rays into first, I think that would be a mistake. I think you save those guys for the wild card series. I mean, those guys are going to get their starts down the stretch and they're going to help you try to get to that first spot. But if it comes down to it in that Orioles series, I don't see any situation where I'm throwing those guys in that Orioles series unless something crazy has happened and I'm about to fall out of the postseason, which really isn't going to happen.
No, the Jays are going to make it. So I don't think that's the situation. But yeah, it's interesting. Like maybe there is like a bit of a middle ground here where, you know, instead of Casey Lawrence and Thomas Hatch, because the Jays should not pitch Thomas Hatch this year at any point, but maybe instead you do a bullpen game where it's like, okay, Trevor Richards, here's your final tune-up.
My bullpen game? Who? Is it Jordan Romano? I mean, is it Jimmy Garcia? Is it Anthony Bass? Because I want those guys as rested and healthy as possible for the wild card series, and those guys have pitched a lot of innings.
I would use the relievers to help seeding. I can get the case for easing up on the starters and making sure that they're there for games one and two of the postseason. But relievers, they have to pitch. And of course, you're going to be deliberate about it. But if it gets you home field, I would use Jordan Romano and Jimmy Garcia to get you home field. I mean, this is their job.
On the final game, final day of the season, even if like a win would just give you the opportunity for home field. But if the Rays win somewhere else, they're going to get it. Even if it's not control your own destiny. No, I want those guys getting 2 days off before Friday, before game one of the wildcard series. You know how important these relievers are in playoff games. You know how important they're Kevin Gausman, Alek Manoah, you're not going 3 trips through the order in a wild card game unless you're having the game of your life. It's a playoff game. The best pitchers in baseball get shortened in playoff games. You're going to need your Bass, your Romano, your Garcia. You might need those guys 3 days in a row on wild card weekend. I want them having 2 full days down leading into that series.
And I think you have to be deliberate with these guys. You're not using Romano, you know, excessively at this point. If he pitches 30 pitches one day, give him a breather the next. But I don't want to be the one, would not want to be the one to go to Jordan Romano and John Schneider on the final day of the season when you have home field at stake and say, yeah, we're not doing this. This is going to be a Casey Lawrence spot. Like I think that you'd rather see those guys in there pushing, even if it means they're slightly more fatigued.
What is the marginal value to be gained of home field, really? How much is that really going to matter? Or trying to game which opponents you're going to have? Oh, it's an easier path through this side of the bracket. It's still baseball. It's still the postseason. It's still just a coin flip most days. Are you going to move the coin flip chances from 51 to 53 or 52 to 54? Is that your idea? I don't think that's worth it if I bump up against a situation in the wild card series where it's game two and, oh geez, Jordan Romano is his stuff is completely compromised. Like, it is not as effective as it typically is because I used him too much in that Orioles series. And oh, by the way, we didn't win the game because some crazy baseball stuff happened, and Jorge Mateo like blooper fell in, and Raimel Tapia like blew a tire and it went into the right field corner or whatever, right? Like, I no chance am I putting myself in that situation for just a like 1 or 2% margin gain on the wild card series.
Yeah, that's a reasonable case. It's a reasonable case because the home field, from a win probability standpoint, home field advantage in baseball is like 52%. Okay, yeah. So is that 4 percentage points, 52 versus 48? Okay, that's real. That's something. I think you want that. And at the same time, having a rested closer, well, we don't have the data on that, but having a rested closer, how much does that advance things game to game? Is that 4 percentage points? I actually think it might be less. You know, given all the variables in play, that's why I would push and still say use Romano in that situation. Obviously, we're being hyper specific right here, 2 weeks out of time. But I think there is a reasonable case to be made that you're making there, where it's like, you know what, just rest these guys completely. I just don't think the Jays would do it.
That's the way I lean if I'm baseball ops. I do understand there might be a baseball business decision that might be a little different about whether you want to have those three home games or not. I think that if I was in the business department, business ops for the Blue Jays, I'd probably feel different. No, push, get us those home dates. I'll tell you this, like the Blue Jays, part of why you track everything throughout the course of the year, right? Like part of why you track pitches and workload and how much guys are throwing in between outings and their bullpens, and you do all these strength tests and check-ins throughout the year, is to get an idea of like when each individual's at their best based on the amount of workload and rest that they've had prior. So like we can look at those Alek Manoah numbers, right? And the difference between 4 and 5 days rest for him, it does show up big time in like the results. But I do think also it would show up one way or the other for the Blue Jays just in the strength tests that they do with them in between outings, in the subjective feedback that they get from him and like how he feels, and also in some of the pitch data as well, and just like the velocity, the break, the snap, like the release point, how he maintains his mechanics, a lot of the biomechanical stuff, like all of that will play into it. The Blue Jays will have gathered all of this data and all of this information and will be able to make, I think, a really informed decision about like what the optimal amount of rest is for Alek Manoah leading into that wild card series. Like that's part of the reason why you gather all this stuff over time, because you really do want to put guys in the best possible position at this time of year.
Yeah, absolutely. Jays have a lot of data on that, and weird things happen. You know, who knows what the next couple weeks will bring, right? Like if the Yankees lose 6 in a row, that impacts things. If the Jays lose 6 in a row, then maybe they really do have to push. I think based on, you know, the best guess, they'll probably be establishing seeding in that last week of the season with the Mariners, with the Rays. You know, it's like you say, the actual impact in win probability is probably not huge home versus road, but certainly for fans, you know, for media members, where are we traveling, are we not, you know, those variables are pretty big. The team, they're so used to this, it's not necessarily as big a deal, but I still think that the players certainly would rather be at home if they have that choice and have the support of the fans behind them.
One final scenario to throw at you that does pertain to this a little bit, and just how you use guys in that Baltimore series. Is there a scenario you think where it isn't Manoah and Gausman in games 1 and 2, or Gausman, Manoah, where one of those guys is actually the Blue Jays look at and say, well, we'd actually rather save one of those guys for game 3 based on how the DS could line up, based on like what we think is most important in a 3-game series where all the games are in the same city? Think about the last time that we saw the Blue Jays play a 3-game wildcard series. Well, they only played 2 of them because the Rays like swept them away like they were nothing. But what happened? They pitched Hyunjin Ryu in game 1. They saved Taijuan Walker for game 3, and they went Matt Shoemaker, Robbie Ray tandem outing in game 2. So we see a little clue, a little hint at how maybe the Blue Jays think about strategizing for this type of scenario. I would personally throw Gausman, Manoah, Gausman in games 1 and 2, but I do wonder if there is a scenario in which one of those guys is actually being held for game 3.
I think it's good to raise that possibility, because I won't be surprised at all if that's how they do it at all. And is it Berríos? Is it Stripling? You know, there are different ways that you could look at this. Stripling obviously had a rough outing Tuesday, but he's been incredibly consistent all season. I think part of it too depends on the opposition and what lineup you're looking at. You know, Mariners, Rays, and Guardians are pretty much the three teams that you could arguably be facing. And so I haven't done this yet, but it's probably worth doing a real dive as to how those teams approach right-handed pitching in particular, because obviously all four of the Jays starters are righties, and Berríos and Manoah are guys that have really struggled against lefties, relatively speaking. Now, for Manoah, those relative struggles are still pretty effective. For Berríos, those relative struggles are very pronounced. Lefties have hammered him this year. And we've seen opposing managers try to stack their lineups with lefty hitters against both those guys. So depending on the matchup, that's going to inform things. But long story short, I really do think that if you're the Jays, you have to be open to that situation. And then best case scenario, you win, and that guy's then available for game one of the DS. Worst case scenario, you lose, and then you have a very good starter pitching in the elimination game. So we'll see.
For me, it does fall into like the too cute category a little bit. Like when you talk about trying to finish third in the wild card, or like, you know, pushing for home field when you know you're just going to be playing three like must win game, or well, to only two must win, but whatever, three really important games somewhere, regardless of if it's home or if it's away. I don't think that that's something you should push for. And so, you know, similarly, I think you should just start your best two pitchers in games one and games two and hope that you win both of them and then move on to the DS. Like, win the two games that you know you have. Like, put your best foot forward in those two games. You could also have a scenario, I guess, it wouldn't be ideal, where you're like, all right, let's say just for the example, Kevin Gausman, you're starting in game one. If we lose game one, Alek Manoah, you're starting game two. But if we win game one, Manoah, you're starting game three. Like, you could have something like that. Again, too cute for me. I think just win the games that you know you're going to play and then figure out a third game if you get to it. But I think you're right. The matchup will be huge because, you know, you think about it, the Blue Jays are going to look at how Ross Stripling's sort of kitchen sink approach and how his change up and, you know, the curveball and the sinker off of it and the four seamer and everything that he throws plays against that lineup versus, well, actually, we kind of like how Jose Berríos tunneling curveballs off of fastballs works against, against this lineup a little bit more velo from Jose Berríos, and we actually like how that plays, or these guys really struggle against like kind of the strike to ball sort of slurve that Berríos likes to throw sometimes. It could be even just like Berríos gives up a bunch of fly balls off his fastball. Stripling gets a decent amount of ground ball contact, right? So maybe even environment factors into it. I mean, offensive approach of the opposition is going to be a factor too. Cleveland doesn't hit home runs. They don't have any power at all. So you got to be careful with the amount of contact that you're giving up against a lineup like that, and the type of contact that you're giving up as well. So all those things are going to layer into it. I don't think it's going to be a strict meritocracy of, well, Ross Stripling's pitched better over the last 5 months, so obviously he's going to be the guy. I think it's really going to come down to matchups and profiles.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, you know, you look at game three, if it gets to that point, it's a bullpen game. It's a bullpen game, 100%. Yeah. And even if it's Kevin Gausman, like, he could be out of the game in the fifth inning. You know, if he is first and third and, you know, you've got, I don't know, let's say it's a really tough lefty or whatever the case, you really need to bring in Tim Mesa, or, you know, he's starting to fade, you really need Jimmy Garcia. Like, it's a bullpen game at that point. So, you know, and certainly if Gausman and Manoah go games one and game two, then Berríos might go three, followed by Stripling for two, you know, or you might have Mesa for one batter, Simber for one batter, get out of a jam, and then you go to Stripling for four or five, then it's Bass, Romano, you know, to close it out, and Romano's going six out. It's like, there are different ways that you can do this. But I think in a great game three configuration, we're not going to see a starter going six, seven innings unless the Jays are winning big.
Yep. Game three is a bullpen game. And if you're Ben Nicholson Smith, you've burned your bullpen in the Baltimore series in the first two games of the series. And now Jordan Romano actually isn't available, and Jimmy Garcia's arm's barking, and Anthony Bass's stuff isn't very effective because you weren't really prudent with your rest management down the stretch, Ben. So now here comes Zach Pop and David Phelps and Yusei Kikuchi and Taylor Saucedo with the season on the line.
It's the risk you take, but I'll tell you this. Taylor Saucedo is not pitching with the season on the line. That would be a broken down Jordan Romano who would take the mound instead. But we'll see where it all leads here.
We will. We're going to step away, but when we come back, there's a lot more to touch on with the Blue Jays and the 2 weeks remaining in the regular season, plenty of intrigue to come. All that and so much more when we continue on At the Letters. It continues on At the Letters. Arden Zwelling, Ben Nicholson Smith, our producers are Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade, and it is time now for Major League Beer for Major League Baseball, brought to you by Miller Lite, original light beer. Ben, last week you went over the rule changes that MLB will be instituting for the 2023 season, restrictions against the shift, pitch clock, bigger bases. That's all well and good. What is one rule change that you would make when you are king of baseball? What is one rule change that you will be instituting immediately to the product that we all watch every night?
Well, unfortunately, I don't think that will happen, but I do have a lot of ideas here. I'll kind of bend the rules. I'm going to throw two at you. Okay. So okay. One is essentially designed to have managers be a bit more free and a bit more aggressive with their bench. And so we so often see that managers don't want to pinch hit their or for their catcher for fear of putting their last catcher in, because then they're one injury away from having to use an emergency position player, which no one wants to see. And that's not safe. That's not good for players. It's not good for anyone. So I would say that if that happens and your final catcher gets injured, there's a provision where major league teams can either re-enter the catcher who was pinch hit for, or do you use the bullpen catcher, you know, if you really had to. I would like to see something along those lines, because otherwise it just leads to less interesting game management at the end of games. So I would like to see that. And then this one's a little bit more out there. It's an idea my friend Nathan has had for a long time, but I would like to see once a year, managers get one time per year where, because managers get ejected all the time. They get ejected and, oh, you know, they're out of the game. Once a year, I would like to see managers be able to eject umpires. So it only happens 30 times a year in all of Major League Baseball. And it's just once per year they can say, you're gone. And the home plate umpire, whoever it is, they're out. You bring a new umpire in from first base and they have to umpire at that point.
Does the umpire and crew have to work with three? Like they have to work just like if, because you don't get to bring up your, you know, your replacement manager, right? For, or whatever. It's not some guy in the back, like from the coaching staff who joins the like on bench coaching staff. So for the umpires, they would then have to officiate the game with only three.
Exactly. You have to work shorthanded. One of your crew got tossed. Maybe he gets tossed. I mean, this is how it goes. If you get tossed, then that's it.
It would have far too dramatic an impact on the product. I can't get behind it in that case then, because you're going to have missed calls, right? Like, I don't need the umpires are bad enough, man. I don't need them like further compromised to a point where they're going to make even poorer calls because they're now officiating shorthanded. And I also don't like how this is ultimately like teams are just going to use it as a way to like, I just don't like this guy's like strike zone or something, you know, like it's not really going to be a, you know, heat of the moment, I'm angry. It's not going to be what you think it's going to be. It's going to be used tactically, and every team is going to save it for like the final weekend of the season.
Just once a year. Once a year, that's it. No. I mean, it wouldn't overtake the game. I think logistically, I mean, it obviously will never happen. The umpires union, I'm sure, would have something to say about this, and rightfully so. But I do think that there would be something incredibly entertaining about your toss. No, your toss. And then you have to proceed from it.
No, I'm with you on the first one, the bring back in the catcher. I feel like we've talked about that before, actually, that's just something MLB should do. Like, you should be able to re-enter a catcher into a game because if the other catcher gets injured, or you could have like each, you know how in the NHL they have that like emergency goalie, and it's some guy from like in Toronto, it's some kid from Ryerson or something, or like, oh, it's not some kid from Toronto Metropolitan University or whatever it's called now, pardon my mistake. If it's, you know, whatever, it's some kid from the local college who is the like emergency goalie, maybe you should have like an emergency catcher at each MLB ballpark. And it's just somebody from like the local, like intercounty team, or somebody from like the NCAA level in the United States. And they're just on hand in case of emergency.
Yeah. And that way you just avoid that situation where you have to actually use a position player, which only happens once or so a year. But that's partly because managers are so conservative about burning that final catcher.
I wouldn't mind that either from a pitching standpoint, so that I don't need to see position players pitching. If it's like you got to cover the final few outs and you're going to put like Brett Phillips on the mound, why not just have like the emergency pitcher? And as like a manager, the score would have to be wide enough and you'd have to put in all kinds of like, you know, restrictions so that it wasn't abused. And then you can just call on that guy to pitch the final inning or something like that. So you don't have to see like whoever, you know, Reese McGuire chucking up like pitches at Fenway Park. I would be open to that as well.
We're seeing a lot of position players pitch these days.
Yeah.
Danny Jansen can tell you after whiffing against Garrett Stubbs in 84.
That's right. It did just happen. My rule change on a dropped third strike. Why can the batter reach first base? I don't understand why this is even a thing. There's no logic to it. There's no reason for it. If you swing and miss, strike three, I don't care if the catcher catches it or not. You're out. You struck out. You go to the dugout now because you struck out. You don't get to sprint for first base. I don't understand why this is a rule. If the catcher drops the pitch, runners who are already on base can absolutely advance because they reached base in a just and fair manner. But why should the batter have the opportunity to reach first on a dropped third strike? I really don't understand it.
You know what? It is one of those things that's oddly counterintuitive. Like once you actually start thinking about it, because he did swing and miss three times, but of course we're just used to it because that's how the game has always been. But definitely he did swing and miss three times. Like the at-bat is by some measures over, and yet it continues. I actually kind of like seeing that moment of chaos where the catcher's trying to chase down the ball. But I can see where you're coming from logically.
I need logical grounds for it. So then, all right, if we're going to keep it in, then you should get the opportunity to take first on a dropped second strike or a dropped first strike as well. Because that makes logical sense to me. Why is it only on this one pitch that you can do this? If the catcher drops the first or second strike, then you should be able to reach first as well. That would make logical sense. The way the rule is instituted right now makes no sense to me at all.
Well, I actually think that's a great addition. I actually think if you said any time that there's a dropped pitch, you can try to attempt to get to first base. Now, if the catcher retrieves the ball and throws you out, then you've missed your chance to get.
Yeah.
But I think that'd be awesome. I think that would add some real unpredictability to the game.
Sure. That I would be open to that on any pitch, right? Like try to reach first. But if you get thrown out, you're out. But yeah, either way, take it out. I don't understand why you can reach on a dropped third strike. You're out. You struck out. Three strikes. Go back to the dugout. Think about what you've done. The Toronto Blue Jays have some, like, you know what? They've been pretty healthy this year, and I'm sure the Blue Jays would like to keep it that way, but there are a couple things cropping up. George Springer hasn't always looked the greatest, although he is playing regularly and still hitting homers, and, you know, we're still seeing some decent throws from the outfield, but he's obviously got the elbow thing that he's been carrying for, like, the entire back half of the season. Alejandro Kirk's been out of the lineup with the hip thing. He's banged up. Lourdes Gurriel Jr.'s on the IL. Of the Blue Jays' injury concerns and some of the things that they're battling right now, we heard Teoscar Hernandez talking to you guys on Tuesday night about playing through a bunch of stuff. What's sort of the most concerning? What's at the top of your list of impact for the Blue Jays down the stretch into the postseason?
Man, good question. I think going into, you know, 24 hours ago, going into the Philly series, I probably would have said Kirk because he hadn't appeared. Then he goes out and gets three hits and draws a walk, and he's expected to catch Wednesday evening. So probably less of a pressing concern. Same with George Springer. I mean, that elbow, the right elbow, his elbow that's been compromised for a while now, seems to be recovering a little bit to the point that we saw some really good power against the Orioles on the weekend. He homered, obviously, in the series before that against the Rays. So, you know, Springer looks pretty good to me at the plate.
To Springer. Driven to left field. It is gone!
And the left elbow, his good elbow, he took a pitch off of it, but he seems to be doing okay. So I think Springer's, you know, doing better, trending in a good direction. I think Kirk is as well. Lourdes, to me, seems like he's probably the furthest away at this point. So I guess you could say him, but if there's any position the Jays are positioned to absorb an injury, it's definitely corner outfield.
So when I saw that Lourdes had gone to the Blue Jays Player Development Complex in Dunedin to continue working out, I kind of assumed that was to then meet up with the team at the Trop, where they're going to be on the weekend, and potentially be activated on the weekend. Do you not think it's that close with him?
So my understanding is that he will be, meeting up with the team at the Trop this weekend. I don't believe that he's going to be at the point where he's activated then. It would probably have to be when the Blue Jays come home, if then. Because he's just, my understanding is his running really just hasn't progressed to the point that he'd be in a game or able to play left field consistently or potentially run to the extent that he would have to as a hitter. So until he's running more, like at this point, he's going to need more than a few days.
It's interesting because the minor league season is starting to wrap up at a lot of levels. For AAA, it really only goes about a week more. Like, you know, I haven't looked at the Bison schedule. They might only have like 5 or 6 games remaining. How do you think like the ability to get him on a rehab assignment kind of impacts things? I mean, he's going to have been out for a while now if it's going to be through the homestand.
Worst case, if they had to just do a live BP session, you know, you get Matt Bushman on a mound, you get potentially maybe it's a Nate Pearson, maybe it's someone from the taxi squad, and you get them on a mound, that could happen in lieu of a proper rehab stint. So I think there are ways around it. But like you say, the minor league schedule is definitely coming to a close here.
And I think that you look at the way Raimel Tapia has kind of filled in, and he's been pretty productive of late. This has been well-timed for Raimel Tapia to have a bit of a hot streak when he was pretty cold through the summer months. What's kind of his role going forward? Like, how does this evolve with Lourdes Gurriel Jr.'s availability, with thinking about your postseason roster and how he fits in there, and just what Tapia's playing time is and what he kind of brings to the lineup? We know the Blue Jays kind of like the contact-oriented approach towards the bottom. They like having the lefty bat in there. I mean, how does Tapia's season kind of progress from here?
Yeah, it's more clear how you use Tapia when Lourdes is out, because then he becomes a bit more of a everyday player. And he's in there, you know, let's say most days in some capacity. Now, as for what happens once the Jays have Lourdes back, I think it's a bit less clear because, you know, who are you pinch hitting Raimel Tapia for? I'm not sure exactly when that would work or when you would use him as a pinch hitter. Maybe I'm just not being creative enough when I think about what those situations would be. Obviously, there are some matchups where maybe against a certain pitcher, you like him, certainly comfortable. Left-handed swing gives you a different look. All the reasons that they acquired him in the first place, Tapia has somewhat delivered on that. A below average hitter relative to the rest of the league, but still someone who, in the right situation, you know, he's come up with all these bases loaded hits. He's had some big moments for the Jays this year, including against Baltimore with the bases clearing doubles. So you're certainly comfortable starting him. I don't know. Maybe you see it more clearly, or you have a better answer for me than the one I just offered, but how do you see the Tapia thing unfold?
No, and I agree with you. It's who would he pinch hit for? Like, that's why I raised it, because we've seen him sort of cycled in throughout the season as the Blue Jays kind of give some rest to, whether it's like Springer, you know, Teoscar, Lourdes, whoever. But like in the playoffs, 3-game wildcard series, Springer, Teoscar, Lourdes Gurriel Jr., if healthy, if available, are your outfielders no matter what.
Yeah.
And who is Tapia pinch hitting for from that group? I don't really foresee any of them, right? So then it's like, well, would Tapia pinch hit for Danny Jansen? I mean, Danny Jansen's hitting really well lately, right? So I don't think he's going to pinch hit there. Would he pinch hit for like an Espinal? Kevin Biggio's typically been that guy, right? So in a kind of weird way, Raimel Tapia, who over the last 14 days has the 5th most played appearances on the club, like has been playing a lot and seeing a lot of opportunity. If Lourdes Gurriel Jr. gets healthy and is available, his playing time might go to nil very quickly.
Yeah, I think that's entirely possible. And so,
it's not like he's going to be a defensive replacement for somebody either, is the other thing.
You already have your two defensive aces in Zimmer and in Bradley Jr. So he's not playing that role, and nor should he, because he's not a great defender. So, you know, realistically, maybe he's just more of a contingency, you know? And then a layer below that, it's Whit Merrifield, because Merrifield, he's probably 3rd on the second base depth chart right now. And he's something like 5th in the outfield depth chart offensively, and probably 5th on the outfield depth chart defensively. So what exactly does Whit Merrifield do on this team? It's not totally clear. I mean, it's good to have useful, established major league players and voices around. So certainly there's no downside at a time that rosters are 28 to carrying both these guys. But it's a good thing. It's part of the reality of having a team with really good offensive depth. You have decent, established major league players who don't have clear roles.
But I do think it's going to create some very interesting playoff roster decisions down the stretch, because then it's like, are you taking six outfielders on your playoff roster? Like, are you taking Teoscar, Lourdes, George Springer, Tapia, Zimmer, and Jackie Bradley Jr.? And then are you taking Whit Merrifield as well? And like, can you get a third catcher onto that postseason roster? Like, there, I think there's going to be a pretty interesting, if everybody's healthy, everybody's available, everybody's producing the way they can. And does that ever happen? No, but let's just suppose that it does. There could be a pretty interesting position player left off of a potential postseason roster.
There certainly could be. And we'll have a lot of time in the next couple of weeks to zone in more on postseason rosters. But I will say, as a little sneak preview, take Zimmer, take Bradley Jr. I think the Jays should have both in there. Give me that late game defense. It's working really well. And it's, man, Bradley Jr.'s arm out there, Zimmer's range. It's a really good mix defensively.
Are you taking Tapia too in that scenario?
Yeah.
You're taking six outfielders, which then you get maybe one more position player you can take.
And I didn't say I was taking Whit.
Right. So, but then your one more position player would be, would it be, you'd have to be choosing between a Whit Merrifield, between a Gabby Moreno, I mean, between an extra pitcher. I don't know if there's going to, are there pitcher limits in the postseason like there are in the regular season? I should look into that. Don't know off the top of my head. I mean, the catching thing will be, you would think?
On pitching, I would think you have to have 13 pitchers, but I think...
But is there a maximum?
Is there a max... Or sorry. I would say there's a maximum of 13 is what I meant to say. I think the Jays would not be pushing up against that maximum for round one because it's just the three games.
Right. Interesting choices to make. You know how important a bullpen is in the postseason, and like teams like to, we're too deep down the rabbit hole now, but like teams, you know, if you get into a blowout scenario in either direction, teams do like to have that guy who can pitch in that scenario, if it's your Yusei Kikuchi or your Mitch White or whoever. So somebody who will be on a postseason roster, you might be saying, well, what's like, you're never going to throw this guy in leverage. He's for that spot. So you don't have to burn somebody who you might be using in leverage in inconsequential point in a game. But we got weeks to sort out the postseason roster. But it is interesting from the catching perspective, like, which this all kind of, you know, dances around with Kirk's availability, the hip issue, what his workload looks like down the stretch, how often he can play behind the plate. You don't want to aggravate this thing. You don't want it getting worse. Alejandro Kirk's been one of your best hitters all year. Any optimal, ideal playoff lineup has Alejandro Kirk in it, either catching or at DH. Danny Jansen is hitting at a clip right now, which really is earning himself the right to be on the other side of that catcher DH thing, whether he's behind the plate and Kirk's DHing, or maybe Manoah's starting, you got Kirk behind the plate, maybe Danny Jansen is DHing with the way that he's hitting right now. What does this look like down the stretch to you, just in terms of how the Blue Jays juggle all this, playing time, availability, trying to keep guys healthy, trying to maximize production, and then going into the postseason, where you might have a spot where you're starting both catchers on your roster in a game where you might not have a third catcher on the bench?
Yeah, it was really interesting to see Danny Jansen catch Alek Manoah for the first time in 2022 on Sunday. I mean, that was probably a good thing, just because you never know. Like, let's say Jansen's starting a game and Manoah comes in relief. You know, if it's a must-win situation, that could happen. Like, that it really could. You don't want these guys to never work together. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Moving forward, obviously, it'll stem from Kirk's health and how he's feeling. I would expect that to start, he's not catching even two games in a row. Certainly, he's caught three in a row so rarely that you would expect that to continue to be the case until the playoffs. But for the next 2 weeks, start with one, build him up to two in a row. Don't want to overdo it with the hip, certainly. So obviously you're checking in with him. And it's, I mean, we've talked about this at times this year, but you know, you just look at the overall production that they've gotten from these two guys, like what a luxury to have where both Jansen and Kirk are playing this well. It's a great spot for the Jays to be in.
It is just so interesting because earlier this month, Alejandro Kirk started three games in a row for the first time all season. Blue Jays have been super reticent to do that to that point in the season. And what happens immediately? hip injury. I mean, there the workload with Alejandro Kirk behind the plate, and it's like a bigger picture discussion. It's for 23 and beyond and what his future is, like just as a MLB player and how his playing time and how like just his workload has to be managed going forward. But I mean, the Blue Jays really tipped their hand this year in their utilization, their deployment of Kirk as to what they felt he could withstand behind the plate and what he couldn't. And then, I mean, earlier this month, as soon as they had to push him, something went wrong. So it is something I'm filing into the back of my head for the future of Alejandro Kirk as a catcher with the Blue Jays.
Absolutely. A lot of discussion there with Kirk, Jansen, and Moreno. Jansen, after this year, only two more with the Jays before he's a free agent. Time ticks on quickly.
Yeah, well, I mean, he would probably say, hey, man, I've been in the organization for like, what, a decade at this point, right? He would have been like a 12-13 draftee or something like that. I mean, he's been around for, he was a high school guy. He's been around for a while. I'm looking up quickly. 2013 draft. So he's saying, look, this team drafts me in 2013. I got to wait two more years before I get to free agency. He'd look at it a little differently.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right, that's going to be it for us this week. We want to thank Ben Nicholson-Smith for hopping on from Philadelphia. Want to thank our producers, Nick Andrade and Kristen Ryan. Want to thank all you for listening. Talk to you next week on At The Letters.